listening to Nevada Backcountry on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Thanks for joining us this Sunday. David Catalano back in studio. And as a bit of housekeeping, Dave, you are the bat guy, right?
Yes. Yeah, I deal with a lot of bat stuff.
Bats have been identified with rabies in Lyon County. It went out this week as a warning to pet owners and people like, hey, bats have rabies. I got to be real with you. Is that a huge issue?
You know, it's something to be aware of.
Okay, why?
Bats, well, I mean, bats are a, what do they call it, like a primary host for rabies, where right. like dogs and cats or something are what are called spillover hosts.
So what do you mean bats are a primary and dogs are a, what do you mean by that?
A bat is more of like a reservoir for the virus.
Okay.
Where dogs and cats and such are more of a spillover. So they'll get it through, you know, getting bit or getting, you know, in other contact with other critters.
So bats can just carry it.
Yeah. Now, the thing is with bats, a lot of folks see a bat on the ground and they flip out. They think, oh, my God, this thing's got rabies. This is bad. This thing's sick. We get a lot of calls with that. So when a bat is on the ground, it can't fly. It's not like a bird that can just kind of jump up and flutter its wings and it's gone.
Okay.
Where a bat has to climb up something.
And basically and fall into flight.
Yeah. And you're more likely to get rabies from a cat or a dog because you have a lot more exposure to that compared to a bat. Over the last several years, whenever we have to encounter bats that are in an office, a building, you know, school, what have you, anything that may have been in proximity to humans has to be tested. So it goes down to the Department of Ag and they test it for rabies. We get about one a year will return with rabies.
Okay.
And we'll submit quite a few. Last year we didn't have any. This year we've had one.
In Lyon County, the one that's in the news right now?
That's in the news. So yeah, it does happen. I mean, we live in that type of an environment. Nevada has the second most number of species of bats in the country. Arizona outdoes us by three. They've got 26 species. We've got, well, two. We've got 24. They have 26.
Well, okay.
So we've got quite a variety of bats.
Okay, we're going to go down a rabbit hole for a second. So like we have those things on the back porch, the like sunshade things you crank.
People love, the bats love those things.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Okay, am I an insane person for, sometimes I wear gloves, sometimes not, but just kind of get them out of there and move them to a tree or something.
You should not be touching them.
Don't touch them?
You know, it's like any other animal. You corner it.
I touch a lot of animals, Dave.
Well, let's not get into that one, you know. So, but in a situation like that, if you don't have the shots for rabies and such, it's really not a good idea. We tell everyone, don't go grabbing it. You know, let it do its thing. Oh, if you have, especially those big umbrellas, open it up. Okay, that's going to change the environment of that particular deal. It's nice and cozy and warm in there and dark and everything. You open it up, it's exposed. Now you're starting to get a little different temperature ratios. You're going to get a little breeze. The thing's going to move on.
Right.
It bites you, which if you get any animal in a corner,
they're going to bite
you. They're going to get frisky. Okay, yeah. They may bite you, scratch you, what have you. They don't like it. Bats are the same way. They don't want you sit there and grab them. If somebody came up and grabbed you, you'd be a little froggy.
Depends on how handsome he was.
Well, that's true. That's true. I didn't take that into consideration.
No, so this is legit. Like, don't touch bats.
Yeah, no, do not. Do not do that. Because, again, one thing, you don't know if it is a rabid bat.
Yeah.
Most likely in that type of a situation, the probability is that it's not. It was just, it found a location to hunker down for the evening. Mm-hmm. And it just happened to be your umbrella.
Oh, yeah.
Or the eave of your house or the side of your house.
Oh, I've texted you before because they were in that the cracks in the woodwork.
Exactly.
On the front. Yeah.
They love that kind of stuff. And we have a big area here where we have a lot of migrating bats, a bunch. Primarily free tails will come through by the tens of thousands. And
what we see this time of year?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Because our yard, we sit out. In the chairs after, and they're come in,
all over the trees and stuff. Yeah, same in my backyard. It's freaking cool to watch. Now, they'll come in, and I get calls on a regular basis, like, hey, I got a bunch of bats under the eaves of my house. They're right there at the foyer as people come into my house, and there's a bunch of poop here. Those coves, they maintain temperature really well. They heat up during the day, and at night, that heat goes up, and it stays there for the evening.
Okay.
They love it. They'll feed at night, rest, and then they'll do that for a few days, and then that group will probably be gone. They're migrating out. Because these bats, they can fly hundreds and hundreds of miles.
They're not like resident suckers.
No.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No, we do have resident populations. You know, you got the McCarran Bridge group. Right now, there's quite a few. They're going to migrate out. And the other big thing right now is the females are in a natal colony.
A natal colony.
A natal
colony.
Okay. So it'll only be females and the pups.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
Okay, so they'll be in people's attics, the eaves of the houses, like the crest there where they get into a little ball of them,
mm-hmm.
you know, mines, caves, you know, your barn, your shed in the backyard possibly. Those are only females, and they are raising their young. So
okay.
they'll leave at a point, feed, come back to that location, feed their young. The issue that is happening is people are sealing off the holes in their eaves. If the bats can't get out, then they're all going to die in there and it's going to get nasty.
Okay.
If you do what's called an exclusion, which is sometimes it's a one-way door, the bats can go out it. You know, you put it where they're getting in and out, but they can't get back in. Well, if they can't get back in, they can't get to their pups. Pups aren't fledging. They're not flying out. They're not leaving the nest until like August 15th-ish. There's a lot of stuff going on, especially this time of year. People are really revving up. There's a lot of bat movement, a lot of stuff going on. We'll get a ton of phone calls in relation to bats, especially bats on the ground. Generally, there's nothing wrong with them. They just need to find a place to climb up, a wall, a stucco, a tree, a fence, something.
What about like with some leather gloves? Pick it up and put
I would recommend don't touch them.
All right.
Just do not. Now, on the reverse of that, we'll get a phone calls because people will call and say, well, it's on my back porch and I got my kids back here playing around. I have a homeschool group. I've got, you know, I'm a babysitter. I got a bunch of kids, whatever, my cat, my dog, my chihuahua, my chimpanzee, something might play with it. I don't know. Generally in those situations, we're trained. We've got our shots. We've got the proper equipment to come out and we can deal with it.
So call Endow if you do have bats crawling across the back porch and your kids are out there playing.
Yeah. Or if you can keep everyone away and allow the thing to get up onto something.
What about a dustpan and then like flick it?
I don't recommend that. My suggestion to everybody is if you do encounter it and it's right there in front of you and stuff, do not try to mess with it. Just to be safe and sound, because rabies is not curable.
Yeah.
Once you got it, and it can be fatal. So, I mean, do you want to take that risk? I don't think so.
Yeah,
so your crazy weird days are like, come here, babe. I'll just grab this thing and
shoo him along or whatever.
Yeah.
Get him out of here.
Yeah, put it in a tree or something.
Right,
it's not a house finch or something like that or a baby chick.
Well, fair enough. And this is, I mean, you're talking to a guy who wound up in the controlled, whatever, the room with the ping pong ball at the hospital, because I was shooting ground squirrels and I'd just barehand them, throw them into the trash, and they thought I had the bubonic plague because my skin was rotten off.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. So
you didn't learn from that? So you transitioned from squirrels to like, squirrels bad.
Okay.
I'm going to do bats now.
No, I mean, it's rare as I'm thinking here, I'm counting. Okay. So I can think of three occasions off the top of my head where I was like, all right, dude, you got to get out of this thing here. I'm going to take you over here. I'm going to put you in the cottonwood.
Right.
And then we're
going
to move on with our day. We both go our separate ways and now we're both happy.
Yeah. As long as it doesn't.
So it's not like a ton of, exactly.
Bite you, scratch you, something like that. Because, you know, if they start hissing at you and they start acting funny, but not that you're going to know what a funny bat is doing.
They all look funny.
You know, they're all different. And I definitely don't suggest smacking it with a broom and killing it or something.
No.
You know, but because they are, every bat in the state is protected.
Oh, no kidding.
Every bat, they are protected species. It's
protected under what? Like a migratory type deal or?
It's state protected. There's years and years ago, they all became protected. For a while, there were only a few, but then we ended up with this fungal thing in the East Coast called white nose syndrome, which kills them.
I've heard about this. Yeah.
Kills them by the hundreds of thousands. And it started to affect more and more of the species. So with that, all of them have become protected and monitored and now studied. Because without bats in some parts of the country, you wouldn't be able to go outside.
Oh, from the bugs
from
and
the
stuff.
Bugs, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
I mean, there's that one group of bats in Austin, Texas, the Austin Bridge. It's about 3.5-4 million bats, and they're all free tails. kind of like wrap your brain around this one. How heavy is a mosquito?
Oh, I have no, like a thousandth of an ounce or something?
Yeah, something like that, right? That particular colony can eat up to about 3,000 pounds of mosquitoes a night.
Whoa.
So if those bats didn't exist.
It'd be a gnarly place to go outside. Yeah,
I mean, how would Austin, Texas be?
Pretty. Well, I
you know. So I'm just saying they're very valuable.
I got a bat education. I know not to touch them. Thank you for that, Dave. We have got to go to break. Coming up on the show, we're going to talk about some of the fire stuff going on.
Yes.
We're going to talk a little bit about my ever-evolving philosophy on guns and accuracy. And getting my wife and daughter into hunting mode has been kind of an eye-opener for me. Do not go anywhere. Stay tuned to 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Welcome back to Nevada Backcountry on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Thank you to our show sponsors, Rightful Liberty Arms, Shooting Performance Institute, Battleborn Tree Service, and Truck Envy. Do not forget Jim Irwin's Intro to Long Range Shooting course is coming up August 1st and 2nd. So if you have an any legal weapon tag, you owe it to yourself. Go to shootingperformanceinstitute.com. Click on the courses tab and sign up for that intro to long range shooting course. And we will get into some shooting stuff I've been going through lately coming up on the show. However, it's in the news. I feel like we go through this every couple years, Dave. The West is burning. We got two fires burning near us. One of them I'm a little concerned about. And then one of them I think they've pretty much got under wraps. And I'm talking about, for those that don't know, the Biscar Fire and the Elephant Fire. Elephant Fire is that one, like Loyalton, Portola area. And I believe that was the one burning towards Cold Springs. And that one's at 92% containment, or probably higher even by now. It's been a day or two since I looked that up. And then the one north of there, this is the one when I say concern, I don't mean like I'm worried about my personal property or any of that. However, it's burning right into some of my favorite chucker areas. That's the Biscar Fire.
Yeah.
That one's at like 70,000 or 69 something acres and only about 42% contained. And it's burning right along Smoke Creek and heading in towards like Buffalo Meadows area. So that's the one that I'm kind of like, ah, oh, geez, fellas, that whole Poodle Mountain Wilderness area just burned like 3 or 4 years ago. And it was, I just went back into some of my spots there last season and turned up birds where I used to turn up birds. Had some really good shoots in there this past season. And now it's looking like it might burn again. And I'm going, it was just at that, like getting really, really good again point.
It is cranking. I'm trying to pull it up right here to see what acreage we're at, but this stupid thing.
Are you looking at IncineWeb or one of those?
On my Onyx.
Okay, when I looked at it, according to IncineWeb, I believe is how you say that, it was like 69,300 some odd acres, 42% containment.
So I remember the containment was still pretty low.
Yeah. It was at 42% containment. But like I said, that was a couple days ago. Here we sit on Sunday. I'll be honest with you. I have not looked at the numbers since then. I mean, I tend to focus on like local stuff. We also, there was the Parsonnet Peak Fire, Dry Canyon Fire, Cane Springs Fire.
Peavine.
The Peavine Fire. You're talking about Peavine here locally?
Yeah, there's a fire on Peavine.
Right now?
Yeah, that's what my Onyx is saying.
Huh.
Yeah, right off of, what road is this? Red Metal. There's a lot going on right now. And the thing with like that Biscar Fire is it seems to be moving. It's slow and hot, which is never a good thing.
That's the one that like basically reduces everything to.
Well, yeah, because it
burns the minerals and everything.
Right.
In the soil.
It can kill the trees. It completely destroys the shrubs, all the components there. And it heats up the soil so much it kind of neutralizes it. So having things come back naturally is less probable. So that's when you generally will get your cheatgrass infestations and your thistle and some of the undesirables. You know, where when you have a fire that's cruising along and it's fast, but it covers a country, you know. So those fires you hear about, like, hey, it started this morning and it's already at 4,800 acres, and you're like, holy Lord. But those are the ones that kind of wind-driven, high fuel contents, that it just kind of cruises right through, like surface cutting.
Yeah.
You know, burns the bottom of the tree a little bit, but just kind of just cruises across. Generally, those, you know, for a wildlife standpoint and an ecological standpoint, are actually pretty decent.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because a lot of things need fire to regenerate. So sometimes those are better fires. These ones, kind of like this Biscar one that just sits there and just cooks.
That's where we run into issues. And okay.
Yeah, that's where.
You were absolutely right, too. The peavine thing, 67 acres.
Yeah.
I didn't even know peavine, there was a fire going on.
Yeah, I saw smoke the other day. Was it Saturday? Friday. And I was like, oh, okay, something's going on. I said, oh, it's got to be on the California side because where the smoke was coming from.
Oh, gotcha.
But when I got on the map, I'm like, oh, nope, that's us. That's Nevada. But yeah, they've
got
one,
they'll knock that down.
Yeah, they've
no
got
time.
That. They got that one contained. I think that one's at like 98%, or at least it was.
Gotcha.
Yeah, so they got that one locked down pretty tight.
Now, the other ones I started rattling off are the Parsnip Peak, Dry Canyon, Cane Springs. That's all out by Ely, or south of Ely.
South of Ely, yeah.
I have that bad habit, being a Reno guy, where if it's on that side of the state, like basically I think of the state in, you've got Reno, Ely, Vegas, and then Elko. So it could be within, if it's within 5 hours of Ely, I'm like, oh yeah, that's in the Ely part of the state.
Ely, the Ely part.
It's either the Reno part, Elko part, Vegas part, or Ely part.
Yeah, because they got that with the Granite Fire and the Lincoln Canyon Fire.
Yes,
going
on.
Yeah, so that's all in area 115.
But that stuff, when I looked at containment numbers on InciniWeb, most of that stuff was over 95% containment.
Yeah.
So I think they've pretty much got that stuff. And I don't know, you haven't been out in Ely recently, have you?
What was it, 2 weeks ago?
You were out there.
Yeah.
Okay. And did you see any, I mean, as far as like damage or anything?
No.
No, weren't out in that area?
No.
Okay.
No. The spots that I did see some fire, they were relatively small. So just really small burn scars. Stuff that's like, yeah, okay, that's not a big deal.
They mop that up pretty quick.
You know, 3, 5, 7 acre type stuff. You know, ranchers probably burn more than that.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
But
okay.
Yeah, I mean, there's quite a few. You know, you got the Ruby Lake Estate prescription fire going on, which
is
a prescribed burn. Got a fire up there in 076, 101. Nevada is looking good. Let's not jinx us.
I know. I was kind of hesitant to do this, especially because we're right on the cusp of hunting season.
I leave Wednesday, baby.
Yeah. Antelope, cow elk, all that stuff starting August 1. And so I was kind of hesitant to like, oh man, are we going to talk about fires, right? I don't want to jinx this. But
no.
Nevada is looking good. And I mean, there's pros and cons that, right? So there's not a huge fuel load on the landscape, as we learned sitting through that commission meeting thing.
Right.
Anything that does burn, it should be mopped up pretty dang quick. However, that also means there's not a huge fuel. There wasn't a lot of green up. There was such a light winter that we're kind of going into that drought. Everything around us seems to be on fire, Dave.
Oh, well,
Utah.
Yeah.
Oregon.
Colorado. Good chunk of Idaho. Washington. Yeah. California just burns because it's California.
Yep.
I mean, I'm not sure what in the world.
Well, technically that Biscar and Elephant fires are both on that side of the border.
Correct. Yeah. They're both right on the border. But I think last I searched, in total, between California, Oregon, Washington, Idaho, and Utah, there's over 200 fires burning right now.
Good grief.
200. Yeah.
Any of these, like those mega fire complex things where, you know, looking at some of these numbers, I'm not calling a 70,000 acre wildfire small by any stretch, but, you know, not those, like when they get into that, they reach that fire complex stage.
Right.
None of that going on yet.
Not that I've seen. You know, you got that Babylon fire in Utah right now, which is at like 130,000 acres.
Okay.
You got a couple big ones. Ferris fire in Colorado's getting up there, almost 100,000 acres. They're still burnt. The big one that can turn into a large complex fire would be the Cross White fire that's up in Oregon. It's
okay.
Up in Oregon. There are 4 or 5 fires.
All within kissing distance?
And, yeah, and they're all pretty sizable. They're literally, as the crow flies, a couple miles from each other.
Okay.
So, you know, you get a good wind and...
Game over. Then game you over. Have one of those mega complex things.
Exactly. Yeah. So that Cross White Fire actually connected with the Box Springs Fire, and it is knocking at the door of the Camel Hump Fire, and then the Box Springs Fire is knocking at the door of the Brewer Fire. So you combine all four of those and maybe...
What part of the state is that in up there?
Central.
Central Oregon, okay.
Yeah, it's the Ochoco Mountains.
Huh.
So Ochoco Mountains, yeah.
So that one could get out of control, but...
Yeah, I mean, that'll put you over 500,000 plus acres if they all connect, which...
Whoa!
That's a pretty sizable chunk.
That absolutely is.
Yeah.
There is your fire report. No, we're not jinxing anything.
No. We're
but
hoping.
It is, this is relevant stuff to those of you getting out. You know, hunting season is upon us. Archery stuff.
You know, throw a fire extinguisher. I've always got a fire extinguisher on my UTV and a big one in my truck and such. And, you know, just be prepared. Shovel, fire extinguisher. You never know what's going to happen. I think I've told this story in the past where my buddy Jody and I were out hunting one year, deer hunting, and... We were cruising through this basin and we hit some dry lightning kept ripping around us. So we just kind of hunkered down and one of them hit a tree and lit it up. We stood there for a second like, whoa, Jesus, what do we do? Well, we had fire extinguishers in our UTVs and shovels. So we booked booty over to it and we put the fire out. We were able to. So just be aware. Just kind of keep your eyes open and do not park your trucks off into dry grass or cheat grass or dry materials or something, man. If you need to park it off the road to get off the road, jump out, grab your shovel, clean an area out where you know your exhaust is going to be hanging out and just clear an area and then pull it into there or something, man, because we got to protect our open country.
We are going to take a quick break. Do not go anywhere. Stay tuned to 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Welcome back to Nevada Backcountry on this Sunday, proudly sponsored by Shooting Performance Institute, Rightful Liberty Arms, Truck Envy, and Battleborn Tree Service. Now, Dave, we were kind of rushing to beat the music at the end of that last segment there.
Yeah, we were.
You know, just recently going out scouting and everything, we're at that point in the year where everything is about undercarriage high out there, and I carry a fire extinguisher. The shovel, I'm good and bad about. If I'm on a side-by-side or something, definitely shovel.
Yeah.
Truck, sometimes it's rattling in my little off-road kit, but anyway, I got to throw one in. However, you told me a story, I don't know if it was last year or year before last, you were out driving around and those Tacomas have that exhaust design flaw.
Yeah.
Where it's like a, comes to a Y.
Right. So the...
Yeah, tell the story real quick.
Yeah, so it's the... Another Tacomas are awesome. Love it. It's one of the work rigs. Just when you've got that TRD skid plate on there.
Right.
There is a questionable design where the skid plate and part of the exhaust manifold kind of create like a V or a triangle.
Right.
And if you're in brush, this is what happened to us, is a piece of sagebrush got wedged in that V, broke off, and then was just hanging out underneath the truck. And we're cruising along, and we're going up, putting up some bat detectors. And my colleague and I were like, man, do you smell that? And we're like, yeah, what? That smells like sagebrush burning. So we stopped, and we looked around, got our binocs out, thinking there's a fire near us or something, and nothing. We're like, God, we can still smell. So we get back and start driving again, and it keeps getting stronger. We stop again, and there's a little smoke coming out from the hood of the truck.
And you're like, wait.
What the? So we look underneath, and that's when we found it. This just chunk of sagebrush wedged in that. It just got caught in there. So definitely kind of take a look at and
it can happen. You know,
yeah, and it was a 20, the previous body style. It's the previous body, the previous generation of Tacoma. You got the new Tacoma now. This is the previous generation. Gen 3, I think.
I am one of those people sometimes that kind of stuff, yeah, okay, man, how many fires actually start from that? You know, like one of those naysayers where I'm just like, give me a break. Come on. However, after that and being friends with you and you telling me that story, I now, when I park, I do just take a quick peek under the vehicle. Like, am I off of everything? I'm not dragging anything. I don't smell anything. Okay, good. Now I'm going to hike the 4 or 5 miles back into my, so I don't come back.
Well, that'd be sucky, huh? Get up on the halfway up the mountain, a mile and a half from your truck. You look back and you're like, huh, why is everything around my truck smoking?
Yeah. My truck's on fire.
Yeah, why is my truck burning? Oh,
so if one of those cautionary tales, and like I said, I do carry a fire, just a little, one of those mini fire extinguisher things.
Yeah,
a little
truck one or UTV one. Yeah, I've got one on mine. But it's just being a responsible outdoors person and just knowing the risks you take when you do have to get off the road in your rig or what have you. Just it doesn't take more than a minute to look underneath your truck, make sure nothing's dragging or smoking.
Especially after you leave the vicinity of the vehicle.
Yeah.
You know, it's one thing if you're like parked and you're, I'm going to glass here for 2 hours. You're there to catch something. But I think about some of those places I hike into and being away from my vehicle.
Yeah.
So, just take two seconds and take a peek.
That's it.
That's fire stuff. I'm sorry, Dave. Anything else on the fire thing going on right
now? No, no. Just there's a lot going on, man. The West is on fire and the East is flooding.
Yeah, it's the end of times.
Yeah, that's it.
Well, I think typically, we were just talking about that, though. We both have some acquaintances that are wildland firefighters, and I was just telling you, I haven't seen that couple for a while, and you had somebody that was getting some archery training, and so if you know a wildland firefighter or smoke jumper right now, they're probably going to be pretty scarce for the next couple months.
Oh, buddy.
Hopefully none of them have early season tags.
Right. But, that's the tough part about being a wildland fireman.
Yeah, you just don't put in for archery.
Yeah. Well, the cool season.
The other one I knew, a buddy of mine, he was just a diehard bird guy. She's like, there's no point. Like, I want a bow hunt. I'm busy.
Yeah.
I'm working. Yeah. So he's like, chucker's my thing. that's his off season. Skiing and chucker. Let's go into, this is going to be, I don't want to call it a range report like Tom Gresham coming up after our show. I'm not going to call it a range report, Dave, but I am going to go through what I have done thus far in prepping my wife and my daughter to shoot. So
now the daughter is shooting a 243.
She has moved to a 243, and that's what I want to talk about. I got that Seekins setup, and I thought that was going to be the girl's rifle, 6.5 Creedmoor, muzzle brake, carbon barrel, night force scope, the whole nine yards, right? One and done rifle.
Yeah.
For the ladies. So we've been
never that easy.
No, it's not, Dave. Here's the part that there's a little bit of me. I'm reverting back to like shooting when I was younger, where you did not have, everything wasn't minute of angle or mils or this, that, or the other thing, or laser range finder accurate to the 10th, where basically the old school Jack O'Connor deal, you zero 3 inches high at 100 and then out to about 300 ish yards, you are within a killing circle of an animal, an animal's vitals.
Right.
And you didn't worry too much if you were 3 inches low or 3 inches high, whatever. You were still within that 6-inch window to
you're still busting lungs out.
Exactly. Here has been my experience as I'm looking at the clock. I don't know that we'll cover all of this segment. We may get into it next segment. So my daughter, I'm staring at the wall smiling because I'm going to think about how much I want to say here. My daughter,
they listen.
Yeah, I know. My daughter, Madeline, love her to death. However, she, however was a bad choice of words there. No. I love her to death and she's awesome. She's a phenomenal shot. She tells me that she doesn't want to shoot the 6.5 Creedmoor, that it recoils too much. So I'm like, all right, well, shoot, what else do I have? I've got an old, of course, people that listen to the show know me. I'm a Model 70 Winchester fan. Both the pre-64 and then they reissued them in the early 90s. They went back to that controlled feed action that I love. So even the 90s New Haven guns are phenomenal guns. There was that period in the 70s and 80s where they went to the push feed. They just kind of sucked. Anyway, I've got a controlled feed Model 70 and 243. And I'm like, perfect. Woodstocked gun. God only knows how many rounds been through this thing. So I say, all right, Madeline, what about this? And I give her the whole thing. It's an old gun, blah, blah, blah. Well, she loves that. Well, so I, out of curiosity, I run the numbers. It recoils more than the 6.5 Creedmoor. It weighs a little less.
Huh.
And with the load and everything, like, it's right about on par, especially when you talk about, like, with a muzzle brake on the 6.5 Creedmoor. And I'm just like, it doesn't make any sense to me. But she's enthusiastic about shooting it.
Yes.
So that...
So leave it alone.
Yeah. So for listeners... It doesn't have to make sense to make sense sometimes.
Yes.
That's where I'm going with this. This is the lesson I've learned where I'm like, you know, you're looking at it on paper like, eh, I don't know about that, but don't care. She's
enthusiastic. The mind is a powerful thing.
She's enthusiastic about shooting it. And with that gun, we have gone to MPBR, I believe is the acronym. Maximum point blank range. So that gun, that load, 95 grain bullets. I could get into the load specifics. It's a 95 grain Nosler ballistic tip bullet going at just over 3,000 feet per second. Zeroed at 26 yards. She is dead on out to about 305. And by dead
that's
on.
That's better than me.
Well, by dead on, I mean 3 inches high, 3 inches low.
Yeah.
That's my tolerance window.
Right, right, right.
So I'm like, Madeline, and it's got an old, just a duplex, no nothing going on, just a straight duplex in there. And I just told her, hey, all we got to do is get within 300 yards of a pronghorn and you're good. And yeah, what I've had her do.
Which should not be a problem in,
no,
in the area you guys are in. My no. God. 300, you'd have to back up a while.
I know.
You'd have to hold on, honey. We're gonna hit reverse. We're gonna give this thing a chance.
I know. And I've showed her now basically like, here's what we've been doing. Let me see the time. No, I'll tell you what. We will get into what I've been doing with her versus what I've been doing with my wife for shooting when we come back on Nevada Backcountry. Do not go anywhere. Stay tuned to 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Final segment of Nevada Backcountry on this Sunday. I started getting excited over the break there and telling Dave about all the shooting we've been doing.
You guys have been out a lot.
Nonstop.
Yeah.
If we have a free moment, both Cynthia and Madeline are like, we want to go shoot. So I'm like, all right, perfect. Here's the difference between the two of them. I think Madeline likes the nostalgic aspect of an older gun and just a simple setup. And she doesn't really care about, I'm thinking of how to say this. She doesn't really care about the precision aspect. Whereas I've gone down that rabbit hole and I think it's cool to be able to ring steel at 1,000 yards and everything. It's fun. It's fun to shoot like that. And Cynthia is very mathematically minded. So she's understanding the whole like minutes and, you know, we're doing like, okay.
Well, she's a mathematician. So
she likes that
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah. So she's
and
into
the precision.
That. Yeah.
You
the
know?
Precision stuff. Yeah.
So like with Cynthia, I have her, you know, like running up hills and we'll get to the top and it's like, okay, it's at 400 and whatever yards to the steel. It's like, all right, take a shot. Like, here's your minutes. Here's where I want the scope to be, yada, yada, yada. She, okay, gets down, sends it, you know, and she likes that. I think that is too much for my daughter, Madeline.
Oh, yeah. I think that would just.
Radmad's not into that.
No, that's over the top for her. Yeah.
She doesn't like yeah. it. So Cynthia has been much more into that. Like, whoa, this is cool. I can understand the math of this and the shooting longer distances and blah, blah, yeah. blah. And that's her jam. Madeline, what I've done is I've taken an 8.5 by 11 piece of paper. I'm calling that the lungs on an antelope. And yes, for those of you out there, I understand it's not
they're not square.
Not exactly
not
the same. Yeah.
But close enough.
If you
Heck
can
yeah.
hit that, I'm like, that's a dead antelope. So with Madeline, zeroed 26 yards, which works out to like basically 3 inches high at 100. I've done this thing where I'll like range and I'll be like, okay, that tree is at 310 yards. So as long as we don't go beyond that tree, we're good.
Yeah.
And we just walk, and I just have her, okay, Madeline, load, lay down, shoot.
So you have her laying down, you have her like on a tripod, kind of burying it, or always laying down?
No, I just have her getting in the prone.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I just have her getting in the prone. We are going to go out, and I'm going to have her use the trekking poles.
Oh, okay.
How to hold, hook your
right.
thumb,
hook
you know.
Yeah.
I got rid of all the fancy bullseye targets and all yeah. that. I just draw a dot with a Sharpie in the center of an 8.5 by 11 piece of paper, stuck it to the target, the cardboard target face.
Yeah.
I was like, all right,
so
perfect,
just hit
kid.
That.
I don't walk with a rangefinder. I don't walk with anything. I'm just like, hey, all right, we're going to take 50, 60 steps.
Yeah, because from there to the tree, she should just be putting the crosshairs on the piece of paper and letting it rip, and it should hit high or low 3 inches-ish. Yep.
Yeah. And, okay. you know, sometimes she pulls it a little. It's slightly red.
Yeah, but she's still on the paper.
She's still on the paper.
She'll be fine.
For her, she likes that. Whereas there is that part of my brain where I'm like, yeah, but they're not all stacked in the center.
Yeah, but that's you. That's you and Cynthia, where your daughter's digging this right now, and she's just so excited. She's hitting the paper. You know, maybe when she gets to being 13, 14, 15, moving her way up, now she's getting more like mom and you, and she's like, God dang it, I'm an inch out of the black.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and it might change by then. Yeah, if you push that on her now, she's going to be like, here's your gun, Dad. I'm out.
Dave, I'm rediscovering my love of that simpler rifle shooting.
Yeah.
Where it's like a walnut, by all accounts, the thing should not, you know, it's a walnut stock gun. That's not cool. Now you need the synthetic with adjustable M-lock, blah, 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 on and on. I've been having fun with RadMad, where it's like, hey, yeah, this is an old school Model 70 with a little duplex reticle in there.
Yeah.
We're not calculating anything. We're not. Nothing. We're just walking and shooting. And as long as we're within 300 yards, she's keeping them all on a piece of paper. And I'm like,
yeah,
oh, this is kind of fun.
You'll be processing an antelope.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. For me to stay, to keep enjoying shooting a rifle and stuff. So what I've done is, you know, like you're shooting the gong.
You guys have a rifle hunt coming up.
Yeah. 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 You know, you shoot 1,000, 1,500 yards and hit the gong. Well, I put it out at like 300 or so and shoot the gong. So what I do is when I shoot the gun, I count to three and then I hit my play button on my phone and it plays the gong sound.
Perfect. Yeah.
So it keeps me going.
Yeah.
Because
you're motivated.
Yeah, I'm motivated.
In all seriousness, have you guys been getting out and shooting?
We have not yet.
Oh,
she
okay.
has been so busy. I've been busy. She has actually mentioned to me, she's like, with your cow elk tag and your deer tag, why don't we turn in the antelope tags, the shorter than ears tags, and save those. Save that hunt for a year that you don't have several tags, plus helping Pat on his desert sheep hunt and, helping Henry and Cynthia out there with the California hunt.
Yep.
She goes, you got a buttload of hunting to do.
Okay.
Why don't we save, because I think we have like 7-8 points for
horn shorter.
We'll get another, no problem. So we're discussing that. I don't like turning tags in, but realistically... I told her, I said, you know what? Let's wait till after I've got the cow elk on the ground and we know that's meat in the freezer. Then we'll turn in the antelope.
100%. Yeah. That's not a bad call at all, Dave.
Yeah.
Because then if the freezer's full, then it's kind of like, okay, pressure's off. Now I can, like, you can do the deer hunt for fun or whatever.
Right.
Yeah. Three is a, man, that's a good run. That's a lot.
It's a lot.
Three tags,
four animals.
Yeah.
That's a lot, and there's just the two of us. That's a lot of eating, which is okay with me.
But. Well, technically four tags, but Gina, you guys have the party tag.
Right, exactly. We got the party tag. Yeah. So we'll see how that plays out. So
okay.
I'll keep everyone informed. How's
Gina feeling? Is she motivated?
She really likes that horn shorter than ears tag. She does. She really digs it because she goes, there's no pressure. It's not, you know, it's not that hunt where we go in there and you're like, ooh, it's only a 65. You know, antelope. So let's look for a 75 or a 70.
Right.
She goes, I don't know. It's an antelope and I shoot it.
Yeah.
She likes that part. But
okay. So wait, back up. You and Pat are on the party tag for the cow.
And for the deer.
And then you and Gina are the party for the antelope.
For the antelope.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so she would have to turn hers in too.
Yeah,
so
we'd both turn them in.
Yeah, okay.
We would both turn them in, and, you know, once I get the cow elk on the ground and freezer's full, we'll be like, okay, we'll save that for next year, you know, whatever. So we still have a hunt to do that next year.
Oh, you hate, though, for her to be excited about her only hunt and then be like, we're turning it in. Yeah. But
well, she's the one that brought it up, so I'm like, all right, babe. So
it does make the most sense.
Yeah,
if I'm just being honest. Yeah.
It does, and there's a lot of things going on, you know, so... But
so you guys have not been out rifle shooting.
We have not. We have not gone out yet. We were planning on going a couple weekends ago, but that happened to be the weekend where it was like 100.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yep. She was like, yeah, I'm not doing that.
Yeah, no.
It's too hot.
I don't blame her. Well, shoot, if you guys do decide to get out and shoot with us, I'll tell you, Dave, I've been having a lot of fun leaving the electronics in the car and just
that's got to be a blast.
The old school Jack O'Connor thing.
Oh, man.
And to get motivated, too, I tracked down a copy of his Sheep and Sheep Hunting.
Oh.
Last published in 1976, 74, and he died in 70, he died in 78, I think, 76 or 78. So it was one of his last. But it's like the Bible on sheep hunting. I managed to track down a copy of it and gave it to Cynthia as like a little bit of motivation. So some of those like, I miss just the whole thing being a little more simple.
Well, and that's nice. So your daughter's kind of reinvigorating that in you, like that whole simplicity of hunting, you know, just getting out there. Like I've been shooting my longbow.
Have you really?
I have actually been launching a bunch. I built a new string for it, and I thought, well, I'm gonna, since I built it, I might as well lock this dog in. So I did, went in the backyard.
Are those gears turning?
Yo, big time.
You thinking
like
about
this,
it?
Yeah, this morning, this morning before coming to the show, I pulled out, you know, a handful of my new arrows I made for my longbow and went out there and flung them for a while and just kept doing it. And I'm like, dude, I should be shooting my broadheads. I should be shooting my bow for cow hunting, but I've got that bow pretty dialed
in. Well, that's what I mean, though. The gear's turning. Are you thinking about maybe doing the cow thing with the longbow?
No, I got to get one on the ground.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
I got to.
Get that monkey off your back.
Got to get that monkey off my back.
Okay.
So I've thought about bringing it, but I'm...
Just got to get it.
I need to get that animal on the ground, and then I might try the deer hunt. I might try the deer hunt with the longbow.
That'd be rad. Yeah, that'd be super cool.
So if a forky gets in my way, or I don't care if it's got antlers, with a longbow, I am going to elf that thing.
Yeah.
What's his name? Legolas? Is that it?
From Lord of the Rings.
Lord of the Rings? Yeah, I'm going to
elf him.
I'm going to elf him.
I think that stuff's cool. Here's the problem. I can't ever just exist in like a happy medium. For me, I'm either like, I want to be able to hit an apple at a grand.
Yes.
Or... I want to do it this way and, you know, and like go back with my little moccasins. And it's like, why can't I just exist in the middle and enjoy my life?
It's probably our ADHD.
Is that what it is?
I think it is, because we're constantly like, oh, that looks fun. And you just kind of gravitate to it.
Thank you all for joining us on this Sunday. And thank you again to our show sponsors who bring you this content. Support the businesses that support this show. On that note, Dave and I are out of here. Do not go anywhere. Tom Gresham's Gun Talk is coming up next.